You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot, fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day. I get excited about it every night about it. A real C's fan wouldn't want to live their life without it. Banner 18 in the making, we gotta make it. Best squad in the East and still we can't get complacent. Most winning franchise, so the history's ancient. You could tell them other guys to go and plan a vacation. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and Jay King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. The most in-depth coverage that you ever gonna hear. Well respected in the city like Russell's career. It's Raining Jay. Millie.
Welcome back. This is the Locked On Celtics podcast. I want to thank you all for making this part of your daily routine. We're here for you Monday through Friday. And this is the Thursday show. Happy Thursday. Your work week is almost over, and we're going to help you get through it the last couple days. Today, it's me, John Corrales of MassLive.com, joined by the kid, Jay King of The Athletic. Jay, how you feeling today?
I'm feeling great. How are you feeling?
I don't feel good at all.
Are you sick?
No, I'm just tired. I was just up late, up early. So, but I'm okay, man. I feel
beat life, baby.
It's it. The beat life. I'm learning. I'm getting through it. getting a hang of everything. We're the Rated Jays, and we're going to take you through all of the our thoughts from Game 2 going into Game 3. Celtics had an off day, so there wasn't anything new out of the Celtics on Wednesday. It was a travel day, no media availability. Not that we knew, not that we had anything to ask, because I tell you, Jay, the one thing, speaking of the beat life, I love the fact that there's so much media availability. Like, it feels like that would be a good thing, but also, like, there's nothing to ask by, like, the third time you talk to Brad Stevens in the course of, like, 18 hours. Like, that press conference, like the pregame one at the podium, people were like, yeah, I got nothing.
Yeah, the pregame one was great. And then Brad said, greatest press conference ever.
Yeah, that was it. So we'll go back to the Game 2, things that went wrong. So let's just start with Kyrie. Kyrie had the second worst game of his life in the playoffs anyway, and really looked out of it.
You think second worst?
Well, statistically speaking,
I think it was statistically speaking his worst.
I thought there was one other game. I guess he left that other
game. He had a 6-point game, but he left that after 12 minutes due to injury.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm not going to argue over it. His worst game of his playoff career.
I'm going worst.
That's fine. You can go worst if you want. Really just nothing was falling. 4 of 18 shooting, obviously, you remember. 1 of 5. Couldn't really connect on a lot of passes, had a lot of turnovers, although I think Sam said it in the post-game pod. I agree. 3 turnovers feels like a little off. But let's start there. I thought that Kyrie in the morning shoot-around looked like out of sorts. Like, he was just like in a bad mood in the morning shoot-around, it felt like. And he never shook it. Like, whatever was bothering him, whatever he was feeling that day, I think it was the entire day was a bad day for Kyrie Irving, and he could just never, ever shake whatever it was.
I don't know. I think he's just not a morning guy.
It's possible, too.
I think he's just tired.
Who in the NBA,
I don't blame him.
You know, yeah. I mean, I don't like being at the shoot arounds at 10 a.m. either. That's normally when I wake up. But yeah, whatever it was, like, he just. Basically, my entire point is he had a bad day, and like it was just a bad day from the beginning. And I just chalk it up to it was a bad day. Like, he wasn't as connected defensively with everyone else that he was in game one. He was making mistakes and just like not recovering. Like, he just kind of stopped doing some of the things that he had been doing. Like, there was something off about Kyrie Irving in this game.
Yeah, he's almost always in control. And even when he has his off games, it's like other people aren't forcing him to miss. he's just missing. I thought for the one of the first times all season, very rarely, and this speaks to how impressive a season he had, but for one of the first times all season, he seemed a little flustered. Like there was that one play he beat Chris Middleton on a switch, got into the paint, Giannis came over, and he just rushed some BS. And it was a very non-Kyrie play. It was
right.
It was a lesser player makes that play, not Kyrie. And I think the Bucks did a really great job defensively. They were all over the place. Their long arms. They had guys in the right spots. They had guys scampering out to shooters. They forced the Celtics into decisions and tough decisions. But Kyrie didn't always handle that well. And that was the weird part of it to me is that he just wasn't in control. And obviously the Bucks had NBA's best defense during the regular season. Obviously they were urgent. They were desperate after losing game one at home. And I thought the Bucks defense was just really damn good. And they obviously made a point of limiting Kyrie and sending as many bodies at him as possible after he was not flawless in game one, but he was in total control of that game.
Absolutely.
And game two was on the Bucks' terms. And Kyrie and the Celtics as a whole, like it's not at all on him. It was an entire team-wide thing where they were rushing shots. They went back, I thought, to a lot of their bad habits offensively. And it started early on. One of the first possessions was Jason Tatum ISOing and pulling a mid-range jumper with plenty of time left in the shot clock. And that's the crap they've kind of avoided so far in the playoffs. But in game two, some of those habits came back and it put the defense in bad spots because the Bucks were getting stops and getting out in transition. And when they get out in transition, Giannis is, you know, five times tougher to guard and all the three-point shooters are five times tougher to guard. And they really, really did a number on the Celtics. I thought the Celtics, even in the first half, they were just clinging to within 4 points or whatever it was. Like they didn't have the same purpose offensively, especially I thought during that first half. And then the second half, things just spiraled and that third quarter was just disgusting.
Yes, it was. It's not all on Kyrie for sure. Like everybody except for Marcus Morris and Al Horford had a tough night offensively. And even Al had five turnovers. So it wasn't a banner night for the Celtics offensively. It does all center around Kyrie Irving, though. Like if Kyrie Irving has just a normal game, not even a special game, just a normal Kyrie Irving game, they might still lose because of all the other things that you said. The Bucks defense was very, very good and somewhat desperate and very forceful and all of that stuff. That all is correct. But even with all of that, they were still within three with 7 minutes to go in the third quarter. So even a normal Kyrie, even from there, if it wasn't even just a normal Kyrie game, if he shook off a bad first half and came in and had an okay second half, things might have been different. So all I'm saying is I'm not sitting here saying, it's all Kyrie's fault, shaking my fist. But it does start with him. And like Terry Rozier has said, how Kyrie goes basically is how we go. And that's how every star and every team has their star player. When Giannis didn't have a great game, the rest of the team didn't have a great game. So I think if Kyrie just has a more focused game and can handle some of the things that you were talking about, then maybe they win game two. But even if he comes in game three and he's just Kyrie again, then that changes a lot of what went wrong in game two.
Yeah, it was not Kyrie's best night. And to me, it was even more interesting because, crazy enough, that's his first playoff loss ever without LeBron James.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
He wasn't healthy last year. It took him until game two of the second round, but now he had a playoff loss without LeBron James and he was bad. He was bad. And I do think there's a different type of pressure on him now. He can't get away with a game like that. I looked up some of his stats historically in the postseason, and one of the last times he threw a clunker was against the Pacers, and he got benched the entire fourth quarter, and LeBron led a comeback without both Kyrie and Kevin Love.
Right.
And it's like, you can get away with that when you have LeBron, but when you're the guy and the Bucks are switching and the Bucks are making things really tough, you need to be the guy to make plays and make good plays. And I think the Celtics need to do a better job of freeing him. I think they need to do a better job of spacing. I think there are a million things they can do better. But some of it does come down to Kyrie just has to be in more control. And especially with the amount of switching the Bucks did, he needs to be able to get in the paint and, as he said, make the right reads. And he didn't do that. And it was weird. Like, he almost always does that, but Game two, it was just a rough one for him.
Something, like I said, something was off with him, and I'll just believe that something was off. Whatever it was, I don't know, but he was off, and he was not focused, and that just resulted in the stuff that we saw. So we'll see what happens in game three with that. Why don't we take a break? We'll come back and take a little closer look at the third quarter collapse and what they might be able to do different. And then we'll talk about adjustments when we come back after that. But first, I want to mention that if you're a person who hires anybody, if you have a business and you're looking to hire people, big business, small business, whatever it is, hiring is challenging. There is one place you can go where the hiring is simple. It's fast. It's smart. Place where the growing business like yours can connect to qualified candidates. I know it's very difficult. It's scary when you're in a business, and if you make a bad hire, it can be very tough to get out of it. So you need to make sure you make a good hire, and that's why you need to make sure you go to ZipRecruiter.com/lockedon. That is because ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, okay? You don't know. There's a new one popping up every day, and they scan them all. They know where to go, and they send them all out there. So they do that, and then they match with their new powerful matching technology. They scan the thousands of resumes that are out there, and they find the right people, and they invite them to apply to your job. So not only do they put your job out there so people can apply, they invite people to apply to your job. And then on top of that, as if that's not enough, they analyze each one and spotlight the top candidates. You never miss a great match. 80% of employers, 80 who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in the first day. That's a great percentage, better than what the Celtics percentage was in game two. So right now, our listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/lockedon. That's ZipRecruiter.com/LOCKEDON. ZipRecruiter.com/lockedon. The smartest way to hire. In the third quarter of game two, even though the Celtics were a little bit kind of iffy, they still, at the seven-minute mark, held or were only down 74-71. And then they just didn't score again for 5 minutes or so. And by that time, they were down 13. And then they just didn't score again for the rest of the quarter. And by that time, they were down 25. So this is, Jay, where I think they really got into some bad habits. And a lot of those, you heard Kyrie after the game talk about quick shots. A lot of those quick shots were, I think, players who said, we really need to score. And maybe they're thinking that Kyrie's not going well tonight, so I got to do it. Gordon Hayward takes a quick shot. Jaylen Brown takes a quick shot. All these guys who can hit these particular shots, it's not that they were necessarily horrible shots, but in the moment, the Celtics needed to score and they needed to stop the run. And what they were so good at doing in the first five games of the playoffs was, like Kyrie said, taking control of the tempo, slowing it down, finding a way to get a good basket. They were patient. They'd work it down even to the 5-4-3 in the shot clock, and they would still get a decent look. And that makes the defense work. That makes sure that you're working it around to look for the best shot. And they just didn't do that in this game. They didn't do the necessary patient things that it took to stop that run. And this goes back to some of the first part, the first segment. If Kyrie was just himself in that moment and took control of that game, then he could have settled things down. And maybe some of these other guys, even though he wasn't hitting, maybe some of these other guys could have gotten some better looks going to the basket or clean catch and shoots. And maybe some of those shots would have fallen and changed the dynamic of this run.
Yeah, I think the Celtics this season haven't always dealt with switching well. And sometimes when they switch, they just think, players think, I can do it myself. And I can go get a bucket. And the offense can stagnate. And that's when the Celtics are at their worst. I think I could be wrong on this stat, but I think the Celtics ended the regular season 28th in points per isolation possession. And that's just not who they are. So when they get mucked up into that type of game, it's not what they like to do. It's not what they should be doing. And they need to be much more patient, much more purposeful about how they attack those switches. And they need to get the right switches. And they need to get guys in position where they can make plays and not in position where they're going to launch up some BS. I do think Gordon Hayward needs to touch the ball more.
Yeah.
I think Gordon Hayward at this stage is one of their guys who can beat switches. He can beat switches in the post if it's a smaller guy. He can take a bigger guy outside. He can draw free throws. He can get in the paint. He's probably the best on their team at making reads when he gets in the paint. I think Gordon Hayward needs to be more of a focus for them in game three than he was in game two. And I think sometimes because he makes the right play, that when other guys aren't making the right play, the ball doesn't get back to him like it should. And I think they need to put a focus on getting Gordon Hayward the ball. And sometimes that'll be Kyrie off ball. Sometimes that'll be when Kyrie's on the bench. But to me, Hayward needs to be more involved in game three, because if the Bucks are switching, he can beat Pat Connaughton. He can beat Ilyas Over or whoever the hell. Like there are a lot of good matchups for him out there. And I think the Celtics need to take advantage of that. And they need to run a lot more of their offense through him.
I think there are things that they can do to beat these switches and rather than stand around. So I first of all, I do totally agree with you that much more Gordon Hayward in these situations. This really is, I think, where you miss Marcus Smart a lot, because in a situation like last night where Kyrie is playing the way he was playing, getting him either off the court for a couple extra minutes or just off the ball and saying, okay, you're just running this action and not having to make those decisions.
And Smart's always so good at recognizing where the Celtics should attack something.
Yes.
That's another thing where he's patient enough to be like, okay, that's where the mismatch is. If Horford has a small on him, let's go to that. If Jason Tatum has a small on him, post him up. Like Smart's very good at reading that and recognizing that and going to that. And not all the Celtics are.
Yeah. I think last night, I think, was just a great example of how much they miss Smart. Not only in that, but just being able to check Bledsoe and say, much more than even Chris Middleton. Just, I think if the Celtics had hit some more shots, then Chris Middleton wouldn't have gotten some of those transition opportunities, and he wouldn't have gotten those 10 three-pointers. He might still hit a few because he's Chris Middleton and he always torches the Celtics. But I think just hitting shots would have limited Chris Middleton to some degree. Having somebody to check Bledsoe and really not have him burn you with 21 points would have been big. But even more so, having him settling down on the offensive end and having Kyrie off ball, or working with him, Kyrie, and Gordon Hayward in that situation, three guys who can pass, who can shoot, who can drive. I mean, that would have really been steady. But they didn't have him, all right, so we can't get too bogged down in that. They still, I think, can get the ball into Gordon Hayward's hands and find ways. Like, he's really good at setting his own defender up to be put out of position. There are actions that you can use against switches that I think they need to be more active than just, okay, here's a guy, here's your mismatch, go attack him one-on-one. The Bucks, I think, are inviting that one-on-one. The one thing I'll disagree with you with, you said they don't like those possessions. I think the Celtics love those possessions. The players love those possessions. They're just not good at them. And that's the problem. They love taking those isolation moments. They just haven't been good at them, and that hurts them. But more than just Tatum taking Connaughton in the post or whatever, like, that's all good. But rather than just four guys standing around and letting one guy go one-on-one, they should be doing things where there's multiple actions. You get creative on the pick and roll, but behind the pick and roll on the other side, on the weak side, you're forcing those defenders to do something, and you're springing guys for backdoor cuts. You just got to get that Bucks defense moving. That's the big thing. Get the Bucks defense moving, run a lot of action, be active on offense, and then force them to make decisions, because as good a defensive team as they are, a lot of it is based on Lopez defending the rim and Giannis defending the rim. And if you can get Horford out there, or if you get somebody out there to kind of make those guys worry about the perimeter, and you burn them backdoor with some other actions to free those guys up, you can really take advantage of the switching of the Bucks. And I think there's something there for the Celtics to do rather than stand around.
Yeah, they definitely need to be just a lot smarter. Just so much smarter. And it was all the habits from the regular season. But when they were at their worst, that's what happened. And the Bucks took advantage of it.
Yeah.
And we haven't even really talked about the defense, but the defense to me was just as bad as anything else. The defense, you cannot give up 47 three-pointers. You can't. And I do think partly the Celtics were hurt by, and it was both ways. It was absolutely both ways. But the tight whistle changed things for them. And it was a much, much tighter whistle than game one. Mm-hmm. From the beginning, the referees were very intent on calling ticky-tack nonsense on both sides. And Celtics got some free throws out of it. Bucks got a lot of free throws out of it. But when Giannis is drawing so many fouls and getting to the line and able to, I think it frees him a little bit to know he can go to the hoop and get the call, versus in game one, he wasn't getting those calls. And he was probably a little more hesitant because of that. Once the hesitation goes, he's just a freight train.
Yeah.
and they have shooters everywhere else. And I mean, Middleton caught fire. George Hill, the three he hit right before halftime, was not a shot he'll hit too often. But the Celtics need to do a much better job at cutting off the arc. You can't have Giannis go for basically 30 and then give up 47 threes at the same time. That just cannot happen. You've got to at least take one of those things away. And you're not going to take Giannis away, but you got to at least be able to limit one of those things to even have a chance. And the 47 attempts was the most startling number to me for the Celtics. 47 is a huge number. The Celtics, to me, they're the jump shooting team in this series. They're the team that's not going to get as many free throws. They're the team that probably won't score as many points in the paint. They need to be the ones hoisting threes, and they didn't even come close with three-point attempts. And there can't be that big a discrepancy the rest of the series.
There cannot. I completely agree. And when we come back, we're going to talk about maybe something that they can do. We'll figure out what adjustments can be made to the game plan, how much needs to be adjusted on either side. We'll talk about that when we come back on the Locked On Celtics podcast. So game three is Friday, which means tomorrow when you're listening to this. The Celtics will practice on Thursday. We'll talk to them. They will tell us nothing about what their adjustments are going to be, but we can try to guess about that. And so I would say that the Celtics mostly don't need to change anything. I don't think they need to change much. If anything,
just don't be dumbasses.
Just don't. Yeah. The really, the only thing they need to change is their attitude and how they play, like how those really the stuff that I said about working the ball around and just making sure that you are patient and getting the best possible look, not the first possible look. I think that will go a long way. And I think you made a great point just before the break. You don't give up 30 to Giannis and the 47 free three-pointers. You just can't do both. So I think you're dead on with that. The Celtics need to make sure that they are doing what they need to do to kind of dissuade Giannis from driving. If he does get past, don't get all sucked in, and then just stay tight on the shooters. And if he goes for 40, he goes for 40. That's not the biggest deal in the world. He can go for 40 and lose. Stay home on those shooters, because if Middleton's doing what he's doing, then forget it. Then you're screwed, and then add Bledsoe on top of that. So they really need to be a lot more disciplined and stick to that defensive game plan. And like I said, offensively, if they're switching, I'd just like to see a little bit more activity and just get them to keep switching. Like
one, and they're still not switching Brook Lopez.
Right. So get whoever is on Lopez, just go set the pick and just attack. Just attack it that way.
Do you know it was a crazy number? What? Brook Lopez was minus 12.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I saw that. Minus 12.
And that was
led by 30.
But most of it, what it meant was like he just wasn't on the court when they went on a 24-2 run.
Well, yeah, exactly.
But that was a wild stat. And, yeah. And it doesn't mean single game plus minus doesn't mean much. But I do think like Celtics pick them, that stuff is still there. They need to be more mindful of getting that when he's on the court.
And I do think, by the way, if they go with more Mirotić, the Celtics definitely need to exploit that. They definitely need to exploit that. And again, not just by going one-on-one and trying to take him off the dribble, but taking him off the dribble and then taking advantage of the collapsing defense to drive and kick sometimes. Sometimes it's just driving and scoring on the guy. But there are opportunities on the floor. Whatever the Bucks do, there are opportunities to exploit that because Lopez is having a very tough time. We knew that was the easy call, that this was going to be a tough matchup. If Mirotić is the guy that goes out there, or even Ilyasova, you can attack those guys and really, really make things difficult on them. It's just a matter of doing it and doing it with enough activity that forces the entire Bucks defense to be mobile in making decisions. That's my big thing. Is if they are going to keep switching, then you've got to just keep making them fine. You want to switch? We're going to make you switch 10 times on a possession. And then one of those guys, one of these Celtics is going to find the right opportunity to make a backdoor cut, or two guys are going to go to the wrong guy, and inevitably somebody's going to get themselves open. I just want the Celtics to be much more active and say, okay, if you're going to switch, we're going to make you really work hard and exploit whatever weakness comes up.
Yeah, they just need to do much better. Much better.
My adjustment.
Somebody reached out to me today. What do you expect from in game three? I have no freaking idea. That's what I expect. I haven't had much of a finger on the Celtics as a basketball team all season. I haven't known when they would dip. I haven't known when they would surge. They've been a tough team to read. This is their first playoff loss, and there will be a lot of pressure on them to go home, get obviously at least one, But if they get two, then they're still in the driver's seat. But Bucks are really good. They're really, really good. And their defense, especially in game two, was outstanding. The Celtics got nothing easy.
What impact do you think Malcolm Brogdon has if he comes back?
I think the biggest thing is he takes minutes from guys who probably shouldn't be on the court in this high quality of a playoff series. I think whether it's Connaughton, sometimes Sterling Brown, sometimes like they started Mirotić basically at the three, and that wasn't great. He got attacked by Jalen very quickly. So I think that's the biggest thing. And then on top of that, he's a 50-40-90 guy who can drive closeouts. And you saw it in game one when the Celtics defense was right. They were forcing guys off the line and running them off the line and forcing the guys like Mirotić, like Ilyasova, like Connaughton, like Sterling Brown to make plays. And that's not them. Malcolm Brogdon can make plays. And that's the difference to me. He's just more dynamic than the other guys that they have, on top of being very efficient and a solid defender. He's just more dynamic, and he gives them another threat in addition to Giannis. Obviously, Giannis and Middleton do a lot for that team, but Brogdon to me is their other guy who can make a play off the bounce and hurt you if you sell out to stop just the three-pointer.
Yeah, I agree. I think if you...
And he always seems to hit huge shots against the Celtics.
Sure, sure. I mean, like I've said before, he's the number one recipient of Giannis assists on the Bucks. So he and Giannis work well together. He just knows where to be, and he finishes. And if you replace Pat Connaughton and Sterling Brown with Malcolm Brogdon, that's a significant upgrade. Because throwing Pat Connaughton out there, he's hit a couple of shots, but that's an area where the Celtics can keep attacking. So getting Brogdon in that area really shores something up for them, and it just really makes the Celtics' job a lot more difficult. All right.
Facts.
You got anything else? We're going to have to do another one of these after practice. So we'll see what the Celtics say. I'm out of adjustments at this point.
Yeah.
Play better.
Do you think that Baines on Giannis should keep happening?
I don't particularly think it's horrible. If the thing about Baines on Giannis is, if you're gonna put Baines on Giannis, then you tell him you either slide your feet. If you get beat, just crush him. Just that's it. Like he's gonna get the foul, so don't ticky-tack foul him. Just if we're gonna do this and we're gonna use Baines for 15 minutes or whatever it is, then if you're gonna get a foul, if you're gonna foul him, then really make him earn it and really wear him down, because that's a strategy I think that can work. The more he drives, the more he feels Aaron Baines and gets that pounding, the less energy he has down the stretch. So I'm not particularly fond of having Baines just in front of Giannis trying to guard him. But at that point, just don't help. Don't bother. Just stay home on the shooters and let Giannis earn him at the line.
Yeah, I'm not sure about the Baines thing. Like, I just think Giannis can get by him, and it doesn't matter that Baines is huge and Baines can move his feet better than most big guys, and doesn't matter how strong he is. Like, Giannis has gotten by him, and Giannis has made plays happen. I don't know whether you take Baines out of the rotation. I don't know if that's the fix. Play Ogilvy at the five. Like, does that work? Do you have enough at the rim there? I don't know. Maybe Baines is the best option. But the Baines minutes went very, very poorly in game two. And part of that is just Baines minutes are when Al Horford is off the court. And the Celtics have continually cratered no matter what when Al Horford gets off the court. But I do wonder if this is a Bane series, and also like whether the Celtics actually have other options outside of him. They don't have to have him guard Giannis, but Giannis is out there with all shooters around him, and you can't really have Baines guard a shooter either, because that's not what you want, him chasing guys at the arc. So I'm not sure I know the answer there. I'm not sure there is a good one. Maybe just play Horford all 48, see if he holds up.
Well, you know, it was funny because Brad subbed Horford out really early in the first quarter. And I think
he subs him out as soon as Lopez goes out.
Yeah. So he subs him out and then subs him back in whenever Lopez comes in. But like, it's also, why not just sub him out a little later and still like he can go through and grab a couple more minutes. Like he can, that's okay. Because if you only play Horford the Lopez minutes, then you just slowly you sit Lopez for just a little bit longer. So I don't know. I think Horford can stay on the floor a little bit longer. I thought that if they start to phase out Lopez, I was wondering if they go back to the two big lineup. Start Horford and Baines.
No. Because you gotta guard the arc. And that's where that lineup just can't hold up. And Giannis is such a force going to the rim. You're going to need to have a lot of guys there. And you got to be able to close out. And that ain't Baines. So I don't know. I'm very curious to see what Brad does there, because I think that was, among other issues, like Baines was a minus 19 in 10 minutes.
That's not minus.
And again, that basically just like he was on the court during that run where everything went drastically wrong. But I do think Giannis hasn't had many problems with Baines at all. And I wonder if the Celtics could have more offensive firepower if they go away from him, or if they can hold up if they go away from him. I don't know. I don't know what the answer is.
Well, we're going to see what Brett has in store.
Maybe, clone Al Horford for game three.
Yeah, see if we can do that. We'll see. We'll talk to them in practice. We'll figure out what they're doing, and then we'll come back for a Friday show, and then we'll figure out what we're doing over the weekend. So remember, if you are a new subscriber or new listener, you can subscribe on the new Himalaya podcast app. Go ahead and download that. It's a great app that curates your feed based on your interests. So download that and subscribe to the Locked On Celtics podcast today. You can also find us wherever else podcasts exist. To subscribe, you regular listeners can give us a 5-star rating and a good written review. That really helps us jump up in the rankings. And that's big deal for us. So go ahead and do that and share the podcast. Tell everybody to listen to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and J. King.